Going Linux, episode 459. Networking, part 2. Get your tech on, it's time to roll. Plug your cords in and take control. Say goodbye to the old routine. Linux is here, it's the future machine. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill. Whether you're new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
If you want, you can send us feedback at our email address at goinglinux@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-904-468-7889.
In today's episode, part 2 of our networking series. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Doing just fine. We've just spent, how long did we spend? An hour talking.
48 minutes.
About all the new stuff that you are using.
I know.
Amazing. Amazing. So tell us a little bit about that. Maybe condense it down so we don't have to spend 48 minutes on the podcast.
Okay. So I heard about a new immutable or as atomic desktop that was built upon a Fedora Keynote Light, and it's called Bazite, and Bazite's mineral, so it kind of goes with the theme. But it's basically so it's made that you can put it on a Steam Deck if you want, or you can put it on your because they have a gaming option. So it also is for just a regular computer if you're a gamer. It has all the gaming stuff built in. One of the things that I thought was really cool, in you know, because Larry uses multiple monitors, it has the barrier already built in and set up, so it would work right out of the box, which I thought was really cool. So it has a bunch of tools and for games, but it also has a lot of things installed for multimedia and like Kden Live, Blender, Darktable, just stuff that you'd use on a daily basis. It's already there, so you don't have to install it. Been using it for about 3 weeks. Last time we recorded is when I heard about it, and I had to try it because I was such a fan of Nobera, which is also based on Fedora. And I just want to say, Larry, Fedora, you know, I've had a love-hate relationship with that because I always had problems. Well, these past two Fedora has made me say, maybe not so much anymore, because I've been so impressed with how well these are put together. Now, I know Fedora didn't put these together, but they're built upon the Fedora back. And so Bazite will also let me install the Nobera Proton GE, which, you know, it's great. Nobera is a great project, but he even contributes to it. It's one of those systems that if you want, you have almost everything you need, but if you need something like I need a Dropbox and Discord and stuff, it's a flat pack. And you go to Discover, you type it in, and there's no guessing if it's a RPM file or it's a dev file or a snap or flat pack. It's just, here's what you got, have at it. You know, it has a actual manager for app images. Do you remember how you usually download app images, you have to go into the properties and turn it on and make it where it executes as a program?
Mm-hmm.
No. It has a program that does all that for you. You download it, and if you want to run the program, you open the manager, you click the button, and it just runs.
So that's cool.
It sets all that, so you don't have to worry about it. It's like you got apps, app images, you got flat packs, you got a lot of stuff that's already built in, you know, that you would ordinarily install anyway. So everything I need is easily got.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's really good, stable, great for games, but also great for just general computing.
Yeah, and also it's the Atomic. It's already updated once. And so basic, just think of you have a big base on the bottom of a block, and then you have little blocks where all your program flat packs and app images, right? Well, the bottom block, you don't get a touch, okay? It's set up with all your drivers and everything. It just works, okay? But saying, oh, there's an update. So they, okay, so while you're doing your thing in the background, it downloads it, and it doesn't even bother you about it. It just does its thing. And then it says, oh, okay, I've got the new image down. So next time restarts, I'm just going to yank the old one out and put the new one in, and everything just works because they don't touch your flat packs or your app images. It's just there. There is a caveat. It does get system updates, but most of it's the your stuff that you've installed that is updating, or it's updating the dependencies that it needs. So you'll see I get one or two updates every couple days, and it takes, you know, 2 minutes to update it, and then it goes about its merry way. But everything takes care of itself. So it's really a great, I don't want to mess with it, or I'm going to send this computer with this to my parents in another state, and it just works. You know, if you have a problem, you can just reboot and go back to the image that did work. So I haven't had to do any of that. It just works. So very impressed.
That's fantastic. I'm going to have to take a look at that and see what it's all about.
Okay, and just a couple little so still like Nubera. I think if you don't want to do the Atomic desktop, Nubera is probably still the best gaming distro out there with all its support, and it's even more focused on gaming than Bazlight. Bazlight's, you know, they're both really good for everything. You know, I've been running that NixOS on my old laptop just to see how long I can go. Well, they switched to the new base, so I followed the instructions and a couple simple commands, and it pulled down the new image, and everything just worked. So that was a complete success.
Good.
Manjaro Linux right now, they're having issues with drivers, it seems like. So I can't really recommend them. Someone told me that Ubuntu Mate was not being actively developed, but I think that's kind of – they're developing it. It's just not – you're not going to see things change rapidly in the interface. So.
Right. Yeah, it's not rapid pace development like it was for a while.
No, but it's super stable, and so it's also a good choice for someone that if you like their stuff to not change, you get set up. Ubuntu Mate is probably one of the good ones, and then Linux Mint released a new version, and people were complaining, so it looks the same. Well, it looks the same because that's how it's designed. Linux Mint is made for people that are coming from, say, Windows and want something that doesn't change rapidly. Not a lot of times people don't want rapid change of their desktop. They want to know where to be able to find what they want. And so Ubuntu Mate and Linux Mint tend to work that way. Is they have kind of a slow roll, so nothing's too, you know, you log in and go, what just happened to my desktop? <You know? laughs> So just know if the back ends of those two are being changed and updated, but it's the front that stays consistent because that's what they're aiming for, and so people are confident that someone's not going to pull the rug out from underneath them. And so that's important for new users. And then the last one, and then I'll be done, is someone who shall go unnamed, and you know who you are, has been bugging me to try OpenSUSE again, or OpenSUSE, as they call it.
Okay.
I am really not I'm going to have to. I've told him I'd look into it. But I'm definitely not going to nuke my main machine. So I believe my NixOS experiment after six, seven months is finally going to get replaced. So anyway, it's just nice having a computer that works and I don't have to really mess with it. Yeah. And then the last thing I want to just mention is there's a ton of links in this episode of things that might come in handy to new users and people that just want to see what they can find. So I found a few that I had forgotten about that is very useful. So
yeah, right. Well, and we'll include all of the links in the show notes. Yes. So that's great. Well, sounds like you've done a little distro hopping and a little distro exploring over the past week or so, a couple of weeks. And we'll all benefit from that for sure. So the biggest thing I see is a switch from Nobara to Bazite. And yeah. I like the idea of Atomic Desktop, although looking at Bazite's site, there's a lot of things you have to click on before you can actually download an image. You have to make a lot of choices. It sounds like they've got different images for different things, different hardware, different desktops that you want, whether you want KDE or GNOME, that sort of thing. So it's...
For you, I would not recommend Bazite. I would recommend what Bazite is built on is KinoLite.
Okay.
It's the one directly supported by the Fedora project. And I include the link in there just for you.
Thank you.
And since you're using an Intel or an AMD, do you have a discrete graphics? Is it an AMD or Intel?
Nope, all Intel.
Well, then KinoLite would be perfect for you because all of that stuff is built into the kernel.
Okay.
There is nothing for you to do. It will see it and optimize it automatically.
I like that. Nothing for me to do.
It operates just because it's immutable or atomic doesn't mean that it will not find the latest drivers and install it. I mean, why it's being installed, that's what it's doing. It's looking.
Yeah.
And so you get a working desktop with basically everything set to go and anything you need to add, you can add by a flat pack, but you don't need. Bazite is the one I was using because it's gaming oriented, and it also has one specific for the NVIDIA driver. But if you have AMD or the Intel chipsets, you can do two things. You can just use KinoLite and add what you want and still game, or you can rebase on Bazite, but that's probably not as new user friendly as it should be. So just use the KinoLite or Bazite depending on your chip, and you're going to get basically the same experience. You might have to add packages that is not ordinarily included. You might have to add, RPM Fusion or whatever. But none of this is stuff that you can't do. And if you're not a gamer, then Bazite's kind of an overkill for you anyway. Just use KinoLite or Silverblue if you like GNOME.
Okay. Well, now you gave me a couple of options, so
you are welcome.
Yes. I appreciate it immensely.
Yeah, I think you'll like the Atomics. The Atomics just, I think that's really going where the future's going to be for,
Yeah.
It really is. Especially
it just makes sense. It
makes sense.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it does.
So anyway, let's move on. I'm really excited about this one. So today we'll be going to be covering part two of networking. In this episode, we're going to cover how you can connect to the internet, and let's start with a discussion on the different ways to get connected.
Okay, getting connected. First of all, cable providers. These guys are using existing cable TV infrastructure to deliver internet services here in the U.S. Before fiber optics, before a lot of other stuff, but after broadcast TV, there was this service called cable, and it's still around, of course, and you can still get it. And some examples here in the U.S. are Comcast Xfinity or Charter Spectrum and Cox Communications. A lot of mergers, Charter and Spectrum and Comcast and everything that I just mentioned used to be separated. Now they're kind of coalesced into maybe two or three. And that's kind of the way that whole industry is going. Another way to get connected is using fiber optics. And some of the fiber optic providers, these are folks who are using fiber optic cables rather than copper cables to deliver the lightning fast internet, as it's called. They like to market it that way, lightning fast. Or just light fast because it's fiber optic. Anyway, examples here in the U.S., Verizon Fios, AT&T Fiber, Google Fiber in selected areas.
Very select areas.
Very selected areas. And there are other home internet providers that provide fiber optics, like the one I use, which is Frontier. And then there are satellite providers. So these are ISPs using satellites in orbit around the Earth to deliver internet services. And examples are HughesNet, Exceed Internet. I've never heard of that one, but it's on the list here. And then Starlink. So there's a lot of news around Starlink and Elon Musk and all that good stuff. And it is definitely the thing that we should be using to get internet to people in rural areas. And there are a whole bunch of regulatory hurdles and all kinds of stuff preventing that. But hey, it's a promising technology for places where it's just too costly to run copper cable or fiber optics or those kinds of things because you're too far out in the sticks. Okay, the next one is 5G internet. These are run by the cellular telephone companies, usually, and they're offering internet over the 5G cellular network. And pick your example. Verizon's one of them. There are a number of others. And many of them have a nice little box that you just plug into the wall, and it connects to the cellular telephone service that you've got. And as long as you've got good 5G service where you are, you've got very fast internet.
Yep, that's the one I have.
Okay. And the last one is dial-up. This is the oldest form of connecting to the internet.
And it's still around, by the way.
I was looking at that going, is that still a thing? And it is. And that's using a regular copper telephone cable. And, you know, cellular phone companies are trying to get rid of the copper telephone lines. But they're still around. And it uses an analog modem that dials into your ISP server via phone lines, similar to making a long-distance phone call. And that's it for our list. Maybe technology will bring us another one, but that's pretty much what we have available these days.
So a couple things. The cable providers have kind of like the monopoly in some of the bigger areas because especially when you have all the buildings so close together, everything has cable. Mm-hmm. So it's easy for them to run their internet service. So they've always been like the big player since when all they could become, when they needed to figure out how to make more money. but they're slowly being supplanted by the fiber optics because more and more cities are running fiber optics just because it's scalable and it can carry more data.
Yeah.
And now, satellite providers. One of the things that is satellite providers is if you have to have a good picture of the sky, like I'm in New Mexico, I have a great picture of the sky. I can see everything, okay? But not everywhere, you know, satellite has limited uses in heavy, like, forested areas. Sometimes the satellites are not in the best location to get a strong enough signal to actually make them usable. If you remember, Larry, back in the day, you used to have the really big dishes. Because and now they're smaller dishes, but there are still satellite providers that use internet, providing internet. There's not many of them. I can't remember what their names are. I just saw them not too long ago, but they still have the long, the big dishes to get the signals, which I thought was hilarious. The big old dishes. So you know, now you have like the dish network. Size dishes, little meat, but they're kind of limited. And if you do have a good, so you have good sky view, and it's also affected by weather too. So, you know, if you have great weather, not as much as the older technology, but the signals have to get through all the noise from the storms and atmosphere, et cetera, et cetera. But the problem with that is it's never been really the down, it's been the up.
Yes.
That's where your latency comes in. So that has never really been a super great one for gaming. Now, they do say Starlink has using different technology to make it better. I don't know enough about it. But you know, they say it's better, but okay. The 5G one I use, that's probably one of the best. If you have a good cell signal, you're going to start seeing where your internet's being offered. It's taken me, I've been living out here, and I didn't have good internet until almost 6 years. So I was paying extraordinarily for this poor dial-up, this radio thing, and it only got like 1.5 down and only 0.5. It was horrible. And it was expensive. And now that they've got this 5G, I can get, you know, 1,000 times better. You know, I went from maybe 3.3 down megs down to 300. And I was paying 100 and some odd dollars. Now I'm only paying 35. Big difference.
Oh, yeah.
And the last one, like I said, believe it or not, there's still some areas in the very rural areas that don't have access to good satellite coverage. They don't have good cell coverage. You know, they're in the mountains. There's no fiber optics because it's just not, you know, they're still not out there. And they might have cable providers to some of it. There's some actual areas that don't even have access to really good cable. So dial-up is the fallback, and it uses the copper lines. That's why we've always tried to keep the copper lines. They don't want it because it's maintenance, but copper lines enable, what is it? It's DSL, right, that uses the copper.
Yeah.
So it's important that, you know, there's, yeah, we might go, golly, you get, I think it's like, what, 128K or 256K down, but it's better than not having internet at all.
Yeah.
So.
Not much.
No, not much, but at least it's, at least you have access, okay? So that's why there's so many, you know, you've got better ones, and as things get, the different ways to deliver internet becomes available, they, you know, we'll, it will help a lot of people. But, you know, you know, Larry, how bad the coverage I had for so long.
Oh, it was horrible. It was horrible. That's one of the reasons why when we record the podcast, we record on our own local machines. And then, Bill, you send me the file so that I can merge them together and edit it, as opposed to trying to record live, because it was just not dependable enough. Or fast enough.
It was, well, you know, under the old system, it would actually take me, because the system was so bad, the service I was getting and I was paying through nose for, it took like 5 to 10 minutes to send a file, side of it. And now it takes 10, 15 seconds.
Yep. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's so, much, did I say much? Much better.
Okay. It's much more good.
Yeah, it's much gooder.
It's much gooder. Okay. So now that you've decided, you've talked to him, you've got your account, and you've got your ISP sorted, okay, it's time to get the computer set up so you can start using the internet and everything that it offers. Okay? Okay. Well, just bear with us, because, you know, we just want to, it might sound like we're patronizing. We're not. We really are. You need to have a computer, okay? Laptop or desktop. Most people today have laptops. I think it's just because it's so portable.
I suppose you could do this with a phone or a tablet or something like that, but we're going to talk from a computer perspective,
okay.
Right?
Yeah, a computer's perspective. Okay. Of course, you all need your internet service provider account. So all, you know, your all the information that you need to that you might need for the computer to get connected. And they usually, I haven't run across one that doesn't, but the ISP, internet service provider, will give you a router that is either hooked up to cable or to a telephone line, or in my case, it just connects wirelessly. But you'll need to have all this, the data from the provider to make this work. And the router is usually provided by the ISP. Okay. So this might not sound, and this is a 50-50, an Ethernet cable. It usually comes to the router, but I've actually had routers that didn't have one. So make sure you have an Ethernet cable.
Yeah, and that brings up something. Even with fiber optics, typically the fiber may come directly to some sort of device in your house, or maybe, you know, some sort of access box somewhere, access panel somewhere. And that may be a fiber optic cable that comes in there, or it may actually be somewhere out on the street if you're in a residential area. Uh-huh. And then the rest of it is still copper, including that Ethernet cable. So the internet inside your house is typically copper wire, and that's fine, because you know, what you want is the fast stuff getting to your house. Once it's in your house, you can route it around however you want, and it'll work just fine on the copper. It's just going long distances on copper takes a toll. So back to, you may need an Ethernet cable.
You might need, but also know that if you don't have an Ethernet cable, a lot of the routers do have a wireless built in. And we'll cover that in just a little while. But so, like mine does, has both. So I wouldn't be out, but I always make sure it comes with a cable. Mine did, so I'm all good. And here's one. Just make sure you have the manual. You might need to look at it just in case, okay? I've had to look at the manual and go, okay, where's that stupid thing again? And it's usually, the button's on the bottom. So,
yeah, the reset button. That's the one you got to look for, yeah.
So, manual's kind of handy to have, and don't throw it away. Put it somewhere safe, because guaranteed you're going to need something in that manual. But, Larry, if you're going to add anything to this list, is there anything that you would suggest, you know, for before you get everything connected?
Well, while you're connecting everything, you want to make sure that you have something to protect all this sensitive equipment from power outages or spikes in power, or, you know, bad weather. And so you want to have a surge protector, or if you want to go whole hog, you can get a UPS, an uninterruptible power supply, to protect your equipment. So that's the only thing else that I would suggest.
Yeah, that's kind of a good point, Larry. A lot of times we forget that we need to protect all that sensitive equipment. So yes, that's a good idea.
Yep.
So once you got all your things set, ready to go, the router's the next thing you're going to want to get set up. And just think of the router as like a traffic cop for your home network. It helps all your devices connect to each other and the internet. It's basically that traffic cop that's saying you can go and you can go. It kind of does it all automatically. So, router is very important. So we want to make sure it's set up. So first things first, make sure it's turned on. You would be surprised how many people say it's not working because they forgot to turn it on. It's sometimes it's just a little light. I've done it myself, so take for what that's worth.
Look for the lights.
Yeah, look for the lights. Because a lot of times you do have to hit the button to turn it on, and sometimes you don't. But hey, if it's not working, it's probably didn't plug in or turned on. And once it's powered up, you're going to look for the lights or indicators that show when it's connected to the internet. And now, if you're using a wired connection like the Ethernet cable, plug it into your computer, and there's only going to be one port. It's going to look like a big phone jack. you can't mess it up. It goes only in, goes in one way. Don't force it. So once you get that connected to your computer, then you have to wait for it to detect the network. And a lot of times you'll see a bunch of lights blinking back and forth. That means that it's either updating with your system credentials, or it's setting up, it's provisioning the system. Just let it do its thing. Don't turn it off. Just let it do its thing. And if you're going wireless, then you're going to make sure that the router is actually broadcasting its signal. And remember I told you to have the manual? Well, the manual will tell you what the name to look for is. It's very important, because sometimes you have a bunch of people having the same type of services, and you're trying to be hard-pressed to figure out which one's yours without the manual and your account information. So keep that stuff with you. And then here's the most important part. This is a pro tip, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
Be patient. Sometimes this takes the router and computer a bit of time to get everything running for the first time. So go make a cup of coffee or go get a beverage of your choice and relax. And let it do its thing.
Let it do its thing. Yeah. Sometimes it's faster and sometimes it's slower, but it has to make that connection before you can do anything with it. That's for sure. So
don't turn it off.
Being patient is a critical component here for sure. And your reference to the phone jack.
Yeah.
That's quaint. There are people in our audience that don't even know what a phone jack looks like. Phone jack is a small version of an Ethernet connector, looking at it from the other perspective. If you look at an Ethernet connection, it's got, six wires? The phone jack has four wires.
And
sometimes it only uses two of those four wires. It's that rudimentary. So anyway, for those of you who don't know what a phone jack is or haven't used a landline, that's what we're talking about there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, moving on.
Most people don't want that landline is anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
A good way is look at the end of the Ethernet cable and then look on the side of your computer for something that looks like it fits it in. It's kind of a square looking hole. So they'll match up. It should fit right in. So that might have been a better way. It's a big square plug if you're using the Ethernet. Okay?
Right, exactly. Yeah, and, you know, maybe your computer's so new that it doesn't have one of those, in which case you may have to have a dongle that adapts from USB-C or USB-3 to Ethernet to be able to plug in a cable into but your then, computer. But,
it, but then again, yeah. If you have your manual, you'd know that, wouldn't you?
Yes, you would.
I'm sorry.
The manual. That's okay. So moving on. So if you've connected wirelessly, you will definitely see the term WPA2. That's the most common way of connecting wirelessly these days. So let's break that down so that you know what it is. So WPA2 is Wi-Fi Protected Access version 2. It's the latest security standard for Wi-Fi networks. It provides stronger encryption than the original WPA1 and helps to protect your network from unauthorized access. It's security for your wireless network. With WPA2, your wireless connection will be encrypted using a strong algorithm that makes it much more difficult for hackers to either intercept or eavesdrop on your data. To use WPA2 security, you'll need to have a compatible router and devices that support the standard, and you'll have those for the most part with modern equipment. And most modern routers come with WPA2 enabled by default. So for the most part, you can simply plug it in and you'll have it. But once you have WP enabled, you can create a strong password, and you'll need to do that for your network and protect yourself using that password from unauthorized access to your encrypted WPA2 internet connection.
Yep. And one of the things that is important, especially if you're on like a mirrored connection that you only have so much data, is you don't want other people using your data. So you want to make sure you have a strong password. And so I thought we could go over a few best practices for WPA2. Some of them are more advanced than others, and some of them are just things that you should know about. So the first one is use strong passwords. Use complex, unique passwords for each device or user connecting to your network. It's very, very important to have a good password. And later on in our show, we have something that might help you with those. So next one is enable the AES 256 encryption. Now, this is usually on by default. Mine was.
Right.
But if it isn't, remember the manual? It'll tell you how to check or how to see what your settings are. This is the strongest encryption algorithm available in WPA2. So make sure it's enabled.
Yes, absolutely. Now, whether you have the manual or not, many internet service providers will lock down your router device so that you don't have access to make changes to some of these things. And the manual that you get for the particular router that you have may show you settings that are unavailable to you. So just realize that there may be, you may have a lockdown device and you may not be able to make some of these setting changes that we're talking about.
Yeah. And if you're concerned about any of those settings not having access, you can always call their tech support and ask for the tech support and tell them your concerns. And usually they can tell you if they're able to help you change them. But from experience, usually the providers tend to be very, very conservative, so they're going to throw everything they can to keep people from abusing their service.
Yep.
So sometimes it doesn't hurt to look. So three is, and this is kind of a more advanced one, and one that you might not be able to shut off again, but if you can, it's disable the SSID broadcasting. Now, this will prevent your network from being visible to unauthorized devices. However, this may cause issues with some devices that rely on discovering networks by name. So what an SSID is basically it broadcasting the name of your network so you can find it and other devices can. But if you don't want it to be easily found, some routers will let you turn the SSID broadcasting off. If you've already got a really good password, then this is not a real device setting that you really need to worry about, unless you just don't want people to know that you have internet. So it's totally optional. If you have a good password, I would probably just not mess with it, but it is a, some people like to do it. So regularly, and this is very important, regularly update your router's firmware. Ensure you're running the latest firmware version, as updates often include security patches and improvements. And the a lot of times you can look, there's a web address that will let you see if there's any updates, and it will be printed in some of your documentation. And of course, use a firewall. The built-in one in your router is usually enabled, so you really don't need to mess with it. But depending if you're supplying your own router, you might want to make sure that your firewall is enabled. So there's some best practices or things to consider doing when you're setting up the WPA2 in your router.
Right. Okay, so now that you've got networking set up, one of the things you want to make sure you do is to update your Linux system or any operating system that you've got connected to the internet. It's a very important part of networking and being connected to the internet. So make sure your system is up to date. You can update either from the command line or software centers, however you normally do it. If you go to the command line and do sudo apt get upgrade -y for Ubuntu-based distributions, you can do that, or just go to your software updater.
Yeah,
that's the easiest way to do it. Yep, and we're all about easy, so make sure your system is up to date.
So, yeah, once you get connected, before you go surfing YouTube, whatever, always make sure that you have the latest updates for your system and patches. It's just being a good internet citizen and it also keeps you and your family safe. So very important. So, each one of these steps builds on each other. But once you've gotten your computer hooked to the internet, you got your ISP picked, you got everything running great, you've got your system updated, then you might think, okay, what next? Well, I have some helpful things that I'm hoping that you'll find helpful. So remember I told you that about always having a really good password for your network? Well, Bitwarden. That's one, number one. Bitwarden can help you generate strong passwords. And you can use it for free. And you can use it on your phone, computer, etc. If you want to support them, it's $10 a month and it gives you some small benefits. But the core system, it's $10 a year, $10 a year. But you don't need to pay them anything to use and save your passwords in their app. So use Bitwarden. It can come up with some very unique, so you never have to repeat using the same password. So you've got this shiny new network. You want to make sure that everything's running good. And the easiest way to do that is going to speedtest.net. It's a helpful website to check your speed of your internet, just to make sure everything looks like it's running good. If it's not, or it's not as fast as you think, then you can run a few more tests and maybe call tech support if something isn't right. So it's a good tool for the toolbox. The next one is one that I still look at, even though I don't run a lot of Ubuntu distributions always jumping around, but I've used it to find answers to a thing. It's called UbuntuForums.org. It's very helpful, and especially if you're running an Ubuntu or an Ubuntu-based distro, it usually has answers. Someone's already had problems, and it's those been around for years. At least 10 more, Larry?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that's been around for a long time that you rely on is the Arch Wiki.
Probably
going to have a few more answers, and oftentimes it gives you solutions to problems that involve running a command on the command line, but it's got a lot of stuff. So between the Ubuntu forums and the Arch Wiki, if you just search for your problem using your browser, you're going to go to one or the other of those more than likely.
I can't believe I forgot Arch Wiki and I've used it. Duh.
Yep.
I'm sorry, Arch guys. My brain is... But yes. So here's the next couple. The Linux Foundation is a great source of information and has paid and free courses that you can take, and it helps build your knowledge. So, yeah, you don't have money? That's fine. They have a lot of free courses that are good quality that you can learn about the different things about your Linux system and open source. So, hey, use it. It's free. The next one is the Linux Documentation Project, and it's also a good information website. So those two sites, and Arch Wiki and the Ubuntu forums, they're all great places to learn. Some are for troubleshooting, more for just learning more about what you can do and can't do with Linux. So, yeah. Moving right along, I included Linux Questions too, because it's another website, and it's been around, I think I read, for 19 years. So it has a wealth of information. So I've used it. I don't use it as much as I used to, but when I first started, it was kind of essential for me.
Yeah, it's got a lot of questions and a lot of answers to those questions as well.
After all that time. And the last one is the EFF, and they're just... So you know who they are, because you'll hear them. They're usually involved in digital privacy. So according to their website, they're the leading nonprofit defending digital privacy, free speech, and innovation. And that's, you know, like I said, it's straight from their website. So they might be a little biased, but they do a lot of special work around software licenses and keeping things open, and there's certain projects they don't get along with too well because they include so much. But that being said, it doesn't hurt to just kind of stay on top of the politics news. So it's a good source of information. So I'm hoping that these links are helpful to help you kind of, get the most out of your computer and learn more of what you can do now that you're connected to the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. So this episode has been really focused more on how to get your network connected. What do you think we're going to do for the next one? I'm kind of looking forward to that. Maybe dig into something a little geekier. What do you think?
So the idea behind this is, unfortunately, networking is such a big subject. You have to kind of break it down. Well, remember the first show, we covered terms and stuff, so when we were talking about stuff, they knew what we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Now this one is how to get them onto the internet so they can actually start using a computer and things that they should be doing. But now we need to start breaking it down. So the next one will probably be something related to either firewalls and how to set those up correctly, do some networking using like a tail scale or something, a wire guard or something like that for your network. So what we're doing is we're building it on blocks. We're building it one block at a time. Once now that we've got this down and they're connected, then now we can talk about some more advanced subjects like wire guard or tail scale or firewalls. And so there's still plenty to go over, and you know, and that's why I wanted to give you the helpful things to go look, because you'll find a lot of information about networking that will just get you that much there a little quicker. But this is kind of a journey. You know, it's not how fast we get there, but it's the destination in the end, and we want everybody to understand, you know, from start to finish.
Yes, you really like that metaphor of the building blocks. I think that that works.
It's the way my brain works. You can't build a house on a weak foundation. You can't read a book unless you know how to read, and you can't read until you know the letters. So it's how we learn as humans, is we have to get the base and then build upon that. And you know, sometimes it's not fast, but once you get it, you get it. And you know, I want everybody to enjoy using the internet, but I want them to be educated in how to care for themselves on the internet, and some of the stuff that I've done stupid. You know, I used to distro hop without ever making a backup. You remember that, Larry? Sometimes daily.
Yeah.
So, and I've lost things, and that's why we always say backup, backup, backup. You know, I've reused weak passwords when I first started because I didn't know about Bitwarden. So that's the kind of stuff that, you know, I just want to share. I'm not trying to insult anybody, but they might not know the resources. I mean, I didn't know about the ArchWiki. I did know about the forums, but I didn't know about Linux questions. So someone said, try that, or the Linux documentation project. And, you know, I found information. I mean, sometimes it was good, sometimes it wasn't, sometimes it's just history. But the more you learn, the more that you understand, and that's how we grow as Linux users. And I fully expect all our minions to be smarter than me. So, yeah, I'm going to make sure that I at least give you the information. Hey, back up, okay? I'm just telling you, back up.
Don't be like Bill. Back up.
Yeah, back up. So, yes, I like the building blocks just because it's easy to visualize what we're doing. And,
yes.
You know, here, how about this, Larry? I would like our users to send in feedback, what they'd like to see in the networking next, whether they'd like to see the firewall, or they want to see tail scale or wire guard or something else, and whichever one gets the most votes, we'll move that toward the top of the queue so it gets done sooner. How's that?
That sounds like a plan.
All right. I look forward to it.
Okay. So in the meantime, can I offer a software suggestion?
Of course.
All right. So this is for those of you who are interested in AI, and who isn't these days. There are a number of GPT-type web apps out there. You never know where that data is going. So just be careful of that. But to address that, there is something called GPT-4ALL. And that's GPT, the number 4, ALL.io. And what that is an application that runs locally on your computer using a language model that you download with the application, typically as a Flatpak, and it will answer your questions, rewrite your inscrutable paragraphs, make your ranting and raving that you're just about to post, and lighten it up a little bit to make it a little bit nicer. You can use it for all the things that you hear about ChatGPT or whatever AI is out there. But it's something that you can use locally. So you're not running the risk of having all of your queries or suggestions or the feedback that it gives you routed all over the internet. And you don't even have to have an internet connection to use it. So GPT for all, thank you to Destination Linux for bringing that to our attention.
Yes.
And you've used this, right, Phil?
I've been using it. And what's really cool, Larry, is it doesn't require an internet, but if you have internet, it can use it. And it will. And what happens is when you download this, you pick which large language model you want. You know, everybody just uses AI, but what these are large language models that have been trained to be chat bots and answer questions. But what's nice about them is each one tells you what resources it needs, and some of them take, you know, 16, 32, but a lot of them take 4 or 8 gigabytes of memory. So if you have a GPU, it will use it, and you know, that's your graphics card. But if you don't have one, you just have an integrated, it doesn't need a GPU either. So it might be a little slower, but I was running it on my i5 over here and with 4, and I was using one that needed 3 gigabytes, and it was running just fine. So yeah, it can run on lower power. Just don't, you know, you're going to have to run one of the smaller models. But if you have a standard machine with, say, 16, you can run 90% of them. And if you have a video card, it's even better. So anyway, it's really good, and it comes in flat pack. I looked on the Snap Store, Larry, and I didn't see it. So I know it's available in flat pack. That's how I got installed on my Bazite system. And so yeah, if you have flat packs or you're willing to do flat packs, go ahead and do it that way, because it was just updated like 2 days ago, Larry, with just some new features. So yeah. And it's also nice to be able to play with it and see how they work, and have your own personal Jarvis.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So, Larry, you gave a good software. I want to give a game. Is that all right?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, and I see it here. So it's Ohio State University. Is that what that is?
No. OSU? Stop it.
No. Oh, sorry. Oh.
Stop it. Okay, it's OSUI, and I guess they OSU is how they say it. According to them, it's the bestest free to win rhythm game, and the link is to FlatHub also, because it's available in Flatpak. It is absolutely one of the nicest looking fun games. Of course, I'm old and therefore I suck at it. But it's got music and is just jamming music, and you're trying to hit the button and swirl the little swirly things. You know, that's the technical term, swirly things. And squiggly things too. And it's all about timing. So me being old, I don't get through them very often. So, but you younger guys, I'm sure, would just make me look like an idiot. But it's a fun game. Give it a whirl. You can play it solo, and you don't need an account. But if you want to play online, you have to make a free account so you can do the multiplayer against other people. But you follow these. You'll get a bunch of ones to that you can play solo, and it's really entertaining. And I spent way too much time on that. So that being said, let's move on before I put my foot in my mouth and make me look even more old and decrepit than I am.
Okay. Well, moving on then, let's talk about our next episode. It will be listener feedback. And we have some listener feedback that we will be including in our next episode. But if you have more, please send it to us. We will always welcome listener feedback.
Yeah, and so, make sure to get your vote in for what you want me to tackle next. So until then, You can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe.
We provide the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux podcast community on community.goinglinux.com.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.